Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Anna Watson. Hello, Anna.
Hi.
So Anna covers city government for us here at the News Tribune and a wide variety of topics. And one of the topics that we've been reporting on a bit recently is transit, here, city transit. To give you a little bit of background, in the August 7th edition of the News Tribune, we had a package of stories about transit. One of the jumping off points was there was a statewide survey or study by the Missouri Public Transit Association, and in it, it basically said every public transit operator in Missouri is facing a demand that it can't meet, and to assist that it may cost the state an extra $340 million a year. And so we use that as a jumping off point to look at our own transit system here in Jefferson City to just get a sense of how it's doing, what are some of the challenges it's facing, and some opportunities perhaps that could exist. So all that being said, Anna, as city government reporter, covers transit and does a great job of it. And so we're going to have her kind of give us an overview of the transit system here in Jefferson City.
Yes, so the Jeff City transit system is called JeffTran, and it runs a public service of 6 routes and then 7 during peak hours. And part of that is also the city's paratransit system called Handy Wheels. And the service runs from 6:40 a.m. to until 6 p.m.
Okay. And so Handy Wheels is you can call up and basically be picked up at your residence, but the others have fixed routes that they run. And they have an app, is that right? There are ways that you can determine how, where the bus is, for instance, if you're wanting to pick it up.
Yes, there's an app associated with that, and it's called the Double Map app. Bus tracker, so you can access that through your smartphone or computer, tablet.
Okay, so what's the annual budget for transit in Jefferson City?
So the annual budget may change from year to year depending on prices or labor costs, but typically transit director Mark Mamert said that the operating budget figure usually falls around $2.5 million.
And how much of that is federal versus city? Because there's a mix there, right?
There is a mix. And about, I would say approximately $800,000 is federal money that subsidizes the transit system. And then usually some of the revenue is also associated with fees, a small part of it. And then the rest is subsidized by the city.
And I know just historically that there have been some efforts to change the hours as well as add routes, change routes. How do they go about doing that?
When I talked to the director, Mamer, about it, it can be very tricky and complex, especially when you talk about changing or adding routes. I mean, I think the change or add or elimination of a route in and of itself calls for a public hearing, and you have to make a case for why you want to add something or eliminate something. But because it's subsidized greatly by the federal government and city, there are a lot of binding terms that come with having services available, and that can align with JeffTran or Handy Wheels. I believe upon speaking with Mamert, he said Handy Wheels, there has to be certain Handy Wheel services to certain parts of the city where JeffTran is also offered. So that kind of binds the city to where they can have those rights accessible. And then in terms of hours, you know, there's a lot on the operating side that goes into why hours are the way they are. According to Mamer, the money received by the federal government is only the money that they're going to get. It doesn't matter if they extend their hours. And so that would either look like getting more money from the city to go longer hours or to get more money from patrons.
Okay. So it's not a situation where if you extend the hours, you're going to get more money. So you basically have to manage the resources you have and adjust either drop routes to extend the hours, for instance, or start later or start earlier and then go from there. Because one of the criticisms I've always heard is that for those who rely upon it to get to a job, for instance, it can be a challenge towards the end of an evening when the routes end at 5 o'clock in that neighborhood and you get off at 5 o'clock. So that's always a challenge that I know that they're facing. Some of the other challenges that they face is the fleet, right? It's a older fleet, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Mamert said So their large buses for the public system are about 35-foot buses.
Okay.
And their Handy Wheels buses are smaller. And so they have a useful life cycle, and those buses are nearing that. So on top of that, it's always a question of whether they will receive the funds to buy new buses. But Mamer also discussed something they're experiencing nationally as a shortage in availability of new buses to buy. And I think I read something in Columbia's newspapers about their transit system also experiencing the same shortage of not being able to obtain those new buses.
Okay. So now if the city were to get new buses, that's a supplemental funding for that? That's not part of the operational money that they get from federal government every year, is that correct?
I believe that's right, yes.
Okay. So, and I know one of the things you've reported about as well is there have been discussions about different styles of buses as far as maybe more eco-friendly. Is that in play as well?
I would say that's in play a little bit, but Mamer didn't really go into the details about that.
Okay. So in addition to an aging fleet, if you will, some of the other operational challenges they have, there are a few. So what are some of those that they're going to be facing?
Well, in the current economic climate, Mamer said a huge factor is rising prices for gas, for maintenance on their facility and bus barn and buses. And also another factor of that is shortage for workers. They currently have 3 vacancies in the bus barn, which would look to hire workers to service the buses. And in order to work in the bus barn, the workers would have to have a certified commercial driver's license.
Okay. So one of the things that always strikes me when we've had stories in the past about transit is it's not always the easiest sell, if you will, before the council, before any council. And perhaps some of that is because of it's not a huge portion of the population. So I go back to the story we did on the statewide study, and it talks about, so there are more than 156,000 Missourians who rely on about 2,000 public transit vehicles on any given day, according to this assessment. And that's about 2.5% of the state's population. About 1.6% of the workers in the state are using public transit for their daily commute. So it's not like it's, I mean, I can't think of the last time I hopped on a bus myself. How about you?
Since college.
Yeah. It's something for a large portion of the population, probably even the council, that it's not something that they're riding daily. So I think that perhaps that may be one reason why it's a bit of a tough sell, given the expense of transit and the personal experience with it. Is that a fair statement, you think?
Yeah, I think so. When I spoke to a few of the council members who said they would be looking at transit in this fiscal year, I think much of the concern was that they want to find money somewhere in the budget to put toward road repairs or infrastructure. And one councilman, Ron Fitzwater, said in the past, parts of our budget have been cut in areas of infrastructure and we're hurting from that.
Yeah.
And so I think their arguments are that they see a resource that people might use more than transit.
Right. That they would touch more of their constituents' lives than transit would. And now, that being said, for the most part, folks who are using transit are either elderly and can't drive or lower income that may not have a car. So those are also areas where it's a challenge that clearly the council has acknowledged that it's a service that should be provided, but it's always this tug and pull as to where money should go from the city budget. So what are some of the discussions they had? For instance, one of the ideas that someone brought forward was to basically suspend fares in an effort to try to boost ridership. Kind of walk us through what that was about.
Right. So there's kind of two discussions, and one that's more ongoing than others. One discussion dealt with the fare suspension, and that was something that was brought up over the past couple months by Councilman Jack Deacon. And he wanted to see whether suspending fares would spur ridership. And he said, if nothing else, it was something to do for the community in order to give back. And so the council kind of tossed this idea around for a while. And some council members wondered whether it would be best to do this. Yes, do this, but do this in a way that could also serve as a study to look at ridership and see whether it changed, decreased, increased from the fare suspension. Others wanted it to be marketed in order to promote it. They thought, well, if we're going to do this, we need to do this all the way and make sure people are aware of that. However, in the August 1st council meeting, it was not passed. It was a close vote, 4-5. Council member Ward was absent, so she didn't vote. But yeah, so that didn't pass. And then the other half of the discussion is what to do about transit currently in this fiscal year. So the transit department has received in the past 2 years and two budgets, it received a surplus of federal dollars from the CARES Act, which was a response to the pandemic and specifically the public transit sector, which was greatly affected by that, or ridership was greatly affected, and then in return, fare revenue. So for the past 2 years, the city has paid substantially less in their subsidy. And I think in 2020, they paid about $500,000 for their subsidy. And last year, they paid about $187,000 for their subsidy, which they typically pay around $1 to $1.1 million to $1.2 million. So this year, the subsidy amount is back to normal in terms of it being around $1 to $1.2 million, I believe. So the second discussion is, okay, where do we look like in terms of our fiscal year to pay that subsidy for transit?
Yeah. You know, it strikes me, going back to the fare debate, that even if it were successful and it really increased the amount of participation or ridership, would it really move the needle that much as far as revenue for transit? Because most of the lion's share of the budget comes from the city funding and the federal funding, not from ridership, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think if they were to pass this suspension, it would be for a period no longer than 6 months. And what they were looking at financially would be forfeiting around $39,000 for that 6 month suspension. So they make about $6,500 a month on fares.
Yeah.
So substantially less than their, on average, $2.5 million operating budget.
Right. Even if they doubled that, that wouldn't be enough to erase the deficit of funding that they need. Interestingly, at the council meeting, so the Transit Commission chairwoman was not a fan of the fare suspension. Why was that?
No, in fact, the Public Transit Advisory Committee met prior to that council meeting to discuss, and they discussed a range of different topics in transit, including this upcoming idea of suspending fares. And they were opposed to the fare suspension on the basis that they feel it didn't really support transit in any way. They said if a suspension were passed, they wouldn't support any decisions that would come based on whether ridership decreased or increased during that period of the suspension. They feel that transit is a critical service. It is also an opportunity for economic development, and it needs to be supported. And so they didn't see the fare suspension as something that would support it.
Interesting. The thing that jumped out at me that she said, and you just said it again, was this idea of transit as economic development. I've never heard that case made before, you know, in the 15 years I've been reading transit stories here. So what's the theory behind how transit can provide economic development for the city?
The theory behind that is that transit would transport people who work in the community to work. And so if it's taking them to, whether there's a factory plant that is a huge economic resource for the community, or whether it's transporting people who work in the restaurant or hospitality industry. And another side to that was, you could argue it's also a resource of economic development because it's transporting people to areas of commerce, to go buy things, to spend money at the grocery store, go to the doctor's, or go downtown to buy coffee, things like that. Like, it's a vehicle to do that.
Well, and I think that's an interesting point, because when you think about the current economic climate, whether it's hospitality and leisure industry or some of these factory positions, those entry-level positions, It's tough for folks who are on a limited income to have transportation, especially with gas at $3.50 to $4 a gallon. And if you can knock some of the barriers down to get them back into the workforce, it does make sense. You know, when you talk about the idea of economic development, the other thing that jumped out at me about the statewide assessment was the public transit industry provides an annual direct economic impact, it said, of about $1.28 billion and employs approximately 4,500 people in Missouri. So I think that's something that's sometimes lost. Is that direct effect, whether it's to get folks to their jobs, or as you say, to give them opportunities to shop and spend that money now that they are earning more money because of their ability to get different jobs or better jobs. So I think it's interesting that's going to be more and more talked about as a selling point, if you will, for why we as a state or we as a city should be supporting public transit. What kind of reaction did that get from the council?
Well, I think to add to that, I mean, we haven't really gotten to the nitty-gritty of the budget just yet. We will be in the coming months. But Jefferson City Transit's budget alone, I think a huge portion of that is just personnel services, which would be the cost for salaries at the department. So that being a huge portion of that, I mean, when you look at making cuts to transit, if that's even something that potentially will happen, where do those cuts come from? Because if you cut them on an operational level, you know, you already have vehicles that possibly need to be replaced. I mean, do those cuts come from the personnel services?
Which would mean basically reduced hours or reduced routes, right?
Right.
I mean, that's at that point, there's not a lot of other areas where you could cut. And it's not as if you could cut Jeftran and not Handy Wheels or vice versa, because federal regulations require that they both be provided. Then you're in danger of losing federal funding if you're not adequately supporting both of those. So yeah, it's going to be a tough sell here. So it'll be interesting to watch as the budget unfolds and we go forward. So I think this is a very interesting discussion, Anna, and I'm going to invite those who are listening, if they have specific thoughts about transit as to where the services could be improved or what other ventures the city should pursue to try to address this need in the community, certainly drop us an email. You can drop me an email at gary@newstribune.com. Anna's email is awatson@newstribune.com. And we'll be happy to chat with you about what your thoughts are as to how we can better serve those who need transportation within the capital city. Anna, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.